Welcome back to the OM podcast, Atware's podcast, all about the mobile industry. And this week, it's also about the sports industry. Instead of myself trying to horribly and awkwardly define what sports is and what it is to everybody and how it syncs in with mobile, I've decided to bring on three experts into the panel today. We've got Mr. Danny. Welcome.
Hello. Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I hear you do some sports.
I do some sports, mainly running.
Exactly.
Away from my kids.
So Danny's a sprinter, long distance sprinter. We've also got Mr. Anthony. Welcome.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Good morning. Anthony's the one that actually kicked this whole idea of doing the sports podcast off. I think you've been emailing us for about 6 to 9 months now.
Yes, bit of a sports fan.
So, and guys, digital. Guys, we should do this podcast. Okay, we'll put it in the queue. Guys, we should do this podcast. So yeah, Anthony wants to be here the most. And all the way from the Sports Geek podcast, we've got a fellow podcaster on. We've got the founder, Mr. Sean Callanan. Welcome.
Thank you very much. And I'm going to say good afternoon because people could be listening to podcasts at any time, or good evening.
Oh, you're a pro.
Because, it's all time shifted. So please, yeah, tweet us in and tell us when you're listening to this.
Exactly.
And tell us who was right. Was it good morning, good afternoon, or good night? It's very Jim Carrey.
Or even Guten Tag.
Well, that's a good – you must listen to a lot of sport podcasts.
Yeah.
When do you listen to podcasts?
So I listen to podcasts in the morning when I'm walking to work. Yeah. So I've got about a 20-minute walk on the way home. When I'm walking home, when I'm going out for a run. So if I do a run around the town, I'll normally have a podcast. Yep. So yeah, it's and then if I ever get in my car and have to do a drive, I'll turn on a podcast because I want to choose what I want to listen to and not seven ads and then a crappy song.
Yeah.
So that's why people, I mean, we're talking to the converted. Yeah. If you're listening to a podcast, you're nodding your head
exactly.
Right now.
Before we get into Sports Geek, I want to ask one more question. I've used this app now called Overcast, and it lets me play the podcast at, you know, 1.5-2 speed, and it's got this kind of, it's called smart speed. It kind of automatically speeds up when there's a gap.
Yep.
It's very, and I'm used to now listening to podcasts, you know, basically double speed, and people think I'm crazy. But do you listen at single speed or are you accelerated?
I don't. So I use Pocket Casts.
Okay. Yep. So that's
Shifty Jelly guys
out of Adelaide.
Yep. Good guys.
So they have. Their app has the same, the remove the gaps.
Yeah.
So that gap would have been taken out. That was pause for effect.
He really is a professional. Yeah. We haven't had a professional excellent. Like him on.
And then it does have the timing and like the speed it up, but sometimes, you know, I prefer to listen to it at normal speed.
You don't like the chipmunks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't want my my experts talking in chipmunk voice. And also, it also colours what you think of the person, because if you start thinking of that, you're getting in your mind's eye what that person looks like and sounds like, and then you meet them in real life and like, man, they're talking really slow. when you're always listening to them in that high pitch, you know. So I don't normally turn it up. 1.5 is about as maximum as I can do.
Do you fast forward bits you don't like?
Not normally. And I don't find that with podcasts anyway, because it's not like you can say fast forward to the next ad it's a bit hard to drill past, because then you drill past something and then you find out, well, what are they talking about now, and go back. It's not the same as a video or TV.
I listen to, you know, a set of tech podcasts normally, and I've got so many podcasts queued up that I kind of don't, I'm impatient.
Yep.
So if they're talking about stuff that I've already listened to, you know, to death, I'll just fast forward.
And I guess it also depends on the types of – if you've got a podcast that's really got a really strict structure and you go, oh, now we're doing our up-down of the week, and you go, oh, I don't really care if that's – then you can.
Yeah.
But if a lot of the podcasts I listen to are conversational podcasts with, you know, entrepreneurs or sports guys, then you want to – if you fast forward 5 minutes, you might miss a really cool anecdote. So it's all about coming down to the right format, I guess.
Cool.
Yeah, I listen at 1.5 speed with the gaps cut out. I find it doesn't chipmunk them though.
Yeah,
they
no,
get
it's
a tiny bit.
You just get used to it, I think. Yeah. You just sort of get used to it. But when it's funny when you go back to 1 speed, it's like, oh my God,
this is so slow.
So slow.
So, so I mentioned you were the founder of Sports Geek.
Yep.
Do you listen to your own podcast at 1.5 speed?
My podcast is about the only podcast I don't listen to. So I don't. Yeah, I probably should go back and listen to some of the back catalogue. But I listen to it obviously when I'm doing it and then when I'm editing it. So I don't normally listen back to it.
It's the third time.
But yeah, so with two podcasts of my own, both Sports Geek Podcast and Beers Blokes Business. Now I don't normally listen back to them at any speed because I was there live.
So you're Australian, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah.
So Sports Geek Podcast, what did you? What's that about?
So Sports Geek Podcast is really about what I do at Sports Geek. So I, you know, the way that I sort of pitch it, it's built for my clients, past and future. So if you work in the world of sports digital or sports business, then I say you should be listening to the podcast because they're the people I'm talking to. So I do an interview sort of weekly with someone in the sports digital, sports tech industry, whether it be on the tech side of the business, so the technology's been rolled out in stadiums and activating for teams, or in the sports digital side of things, so the people who are driving the digital initiatives for the teams or leagues. So I've been lucky enough to have guests around the world from the NBA and the NFL and Major League Baseball and the Premier League and teams like Real Madrid and things like that. So it's always, you know, it's always fun to chat to them about what they're doing in their space and sort of have my take on it.
Who's the most tech-savvy sports club in the world?
Tech-savvy sports
club. Apart from Carlton.
Okay.
Just had to get that in. Yeah, had to get that in.
So from I guess there's sort of a couple of ways. From the tech-savvy point of view, I'm always looking at from the content and the web stuff that they're producing, because that's sort of the area I'm working on. I'm not really talking about the tech-savvy as far as, you know, player tracking and some of the stuff, because a lot of that's getting standardized. Like the NBA and the NHL have now got the sports view cameras that track the movements of all the players, so they don't need those GPS signals. They just track
right
where all the players are going, and it becomes a lot of sports analytics data. As far as most advanced, I'd probably put the San Francisco Giants right up there, AT&T Park, which is their ballpark. I don't know if you've ever been there. They've had Wi-Fi at that ballpark for like 7 years, like so far out in front of everybody else. I was lucky enough to catch up with the CEO, Bill Schlower, when I was there. I've constantly joked that the Wi-Fi at AT&T Park's better than my house. Like you can be filming a video and by the time you hit stop, it's already uploaded to YouTube. That's how quick it is. So that's enabled them to, you know, from a fan experience point of view, you know, your phone is always working. It's one of the most Instagram ballparks in the world. Okay, you put the infrastructure in. You have a nice sunset. There's a bay and a bridge in the background. Yeah. Like it's got all the pieces ready to go. So it does make good from a good tech experience. Yeah. So the San Francisco Giants. I mean, obviously being close to Silicon Valley and a lot of the tech, they get the early stuff to test out and play. So the Golden State Warriors are very similar in that space. And then if you're looking at who's got the latest bells and whistles, then, you know, the San Francisco 49ers have got a new stadium called Levi Stadium right down in the middle of Silicon Valley that's got all the latest shiny toys.
It's strange that near Silicon Valley they've got the best toys. It's an interesting problem with the wireless. At a stadium, you've got tens of thousands of people. Basically, they're all trying to connect to the wireless at once. From my experience, wireless doesn't scale incredibly well.
So even though even though Levi Stadium might have 80,000 people and they'll have Wi-Fi, 80,000 people aren't connected all at once. So it's all about serving enough concurrent users. But the technology is now scaling, but they're putting in a lot of network nodes and stuff. So half the equation is upgrading the DAS. So if I say DAS, you guys know what I'm talking about. Distributed antenna system, right? So to give
everyone,
so to give everyone the 3 and 4G access. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you increase the capacity, because you know you go to a big stadium and 30,000 people turn up, and you can't get 3 or 4G. So it's increasing that, and then it's also if you provide Wi-Fi.
Then you reduce the load on the DAS.
So the SCG is a good example. That when they launched their new stadium now 2 years ago, they put Wi-Fi in that new Noble Bradman stand. And so enough people connected to the Wi-Fi that let the rest of the stadium breathe. So you don't have to have everybody connected on the network. You just have to provide the capacity for everything.
I find that now, exactly to that point, you know, you used to go to the MCG 5 years ago, and at, you know, at the quarter time, you could not even make a call.
Yep.
Now that's sort of a problem of the past. I feels like that, you know, it feels like the telcos have kind of upgraded their.
Yeah, sometimes it's just common sense. So even before Etihad did their rollout of the Wi-Fi, what they found out why you couldn't get a signal out of Etihad was because all the towers they had were pointing upwards, right? Yeah. There's no people above the stadium,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So all they did was they pointed the antennas back into the stadium, right, and then improved the coverage.
Okay.
So, you know, some simple things like that help. But then the other thing is as you put in the Wi-Fi, it's actually cheaper for the providers to have you on their Wi-Fi than it is to have you on their 3 and 4G.
Mm.
All right.
So it's a bit strange that it's taken, you know, the Telstras of the world to realise, you know, Telstra used to have the naming rights to Etihad and they didn't roll anything out. Mm. And, you know, you look at AT&T, which is just as well loved in America as Telstra is loved in Australia, if I can put it bluntly. But, you know, but they rolled out all that tech and they're getting all this love for AT&T Park. Mm. So, you know, it's a bit strange that Telstra had the naming rights for, what was it, 3 or 4 venues for a little while there, and they never rolled out any infrastructure to say, use our products.
So that we're talking about infrastructure, but when we talk about now, are the sports clubs or the stands, are they actually using that tech to do anything more productive than just give people fast internet?
So I guess we're getting into that cool implementation phase now. Like, we're only just, especially in Australia, we're only just getting the infrastructure.
Yep.
And, you know, in the States, they've had that now for, you know, 2 or 3 years. You know, so to give you a bit of a timeline, 2011, I first spoke at SEEK Conference, which is a Sports Entertainment Alliance and Technology. I spoke at that in LA, and it was all the CIOs and CTOs of the sports teams. And the big discussion point then, this is 5 years ago, was Wi-Fi and DAS and how do we get people connected. Now, fast forward, you know, 2 to 3 years, you know, in 2013 in Kansas City, the phrase coming out of that conference was Wi-Fi in stadiums is a utility. It's like toilets.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have a stadium without toilets and you can't have a stadium without Wi-Fi because of the demand, the expectation of fans. So now the whole who pays for it, how do we roll it out, that's sort of been solved in a certain sense. And now we're getting to the point where we're getting to the implementation phase. So, oh, cool, we've got this technology now. What can we do with it? And so it's about integrating it with the, you know, the mobile apps and enhancing the customer experience. So whether it's, you know, things like that is, you know, now we've got the infrastructure there, we can do all the cool stuff that we want to do.
Has there been any impact to the actual game experience that you've seen?
Not particularly. Like, it doesn't improve the game experience so much. And, you know, part of the debate that's been happening for the last couple of years is, do we want the fans to, you know, be on the phone? So the famous, you know, Mark Cuban blog post that people keep digging up, I think it's like from 2011, where he goes, I don't want fans using their stinking smartphones. He's come around a little bit because he realizes – he realizes that everyone is different. Everyone wants to consume their, have their experience different. But it's all about, I guess, augmenting, if I use that, you know, their experience. And so for some, it might be, you know, you miss a play and you want to be able to quickly look at a replay.
Yeah.
You know, the infrastructure provides that.
So second screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've also got a lot of investment in some pretty big screens at some of these ballparks. And everywhere you go, maybe at Etihad or MCG at the moment, there's a TV screen in front of you as well.
Yeah, so it's not, you know, you still don't want someone, you know, pulling out their phone, but if that's what they want to do and if they want to be, you know, chatting with their friend on the other side of the stadium or on the other side of the world when they're at the game, because one of the things that was always frustrating when the infrastructure wasn't there is, you know, as we work with clubs at Sports Geek, we want to tell, you know, we want all the fans to tell everybody, hey, it's awesome to be at the game. Look at us. Look at me. I'm at the game. And it's a time when you want to brag that you're at a game.
Yep.
I mean, you know, if you're not a Carlton supporter, you know, that you want to, you want to take the selfie at the game, or you want to, you know, check in and all of that kind of stuff. And if the infrastructure's not there, you can't do it. But when you put the infrastructure in, the amount of content that comes out of the stadium can really make it compelling to say, get off the couch and come to the stadium. And so, you know, the best case study or example of that was going back to the SCG. They rolled out their Wi-Fi implementation for the pink test versus England, up 4-0, going for the whitewash, creamed them in 3 days. And the amount of content that was coming out of the stadium because it was allowed, you know, and I was helping manage the social for the SCG for that test, and the amount of photos that I saw of the scoreboard that said Australia wins 5-0 was phenomenal.
A lot.
Right? And so it really promoted the fact of, you know, you've got to be part of this experience and, you know, you're missing out, which is up against the model of we've got to get people off the couch. You know, you can watch your sport in HD and it's better than being there. You know, it provides that converse argument to that. So that's why they're rolling out this stuff.
Yeah. Is there something in that in terms of apps? There's an app like FanCred that helps people to boast and brag about what they've been doing. Do you think there's something meaningful in those sort of apps?
Yeah, I'm still not convinced about the subset app, because we've got so many platforms vying for our attention now. You know, everyone, pretty much everyone is on Facebook. You know, yeah. If we're looking at 13.5 or something million Australians, and so everyone is still using Facebook. More and more, you know, Instagram is the big riser that everyone is using it. And video is becoming bigger. Vine is absolutely massive in the States. It's not as big here. It's massive in the States.
Right.
There are Vine celebrities.
No, they're Vine artists.
Oh, they're artists.
Yeah, they're Vine artists.
The 40 Viners.
I thought that sort of Vine really dropped off after Instagram introduced video into their platform.
No, Vine is its own ecosystem. I thought for Twitter should have integrated it just straight into Twitter, and now they've got Twitter Video. Mm. You know,
but
Vine,
but
Vine is its own beast. Like, there's people, you know, that are Vine artists. You know, Vine that are doing artists. These stop motion and quirky videos.
Actually, it's a good let's talk a little bit about Meerkat and Periscope, because they're very timely. So Periscope's the one that Twitter bought, and Meerkat's the one that launched before.
Yep.
And so this lets you stream live video to your followers instantly.
Yep.
So how is that going to affect watching a live sports game?
So what, Meerkat's, 45 days old or something like that, right? So, which is ridiculous. Yeah. And what, two or three weeks ago, I was in San Francisco and it's like 4 weeks old.
Yeah.
And people in the pro, you know, people were talking about it, which is...
I'm going to do one right now.
Are you going to Meerkat or are you...
I'm going to Periscope.
Yeah, see, so I'm only Android, so I'm stuck.
Yeah.
So
Twitter is leaving Android behind a little bit.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. So Meerkat was getting a stack of buzz when I was there, and then Periscope was launched that week. People still haven't figured out how to use it.
Because I'm using it now.
Because the thing is with Periscope but Meerkat is people go, oh, I'm Periscoping, here you go, here's a link. And then they stop after 30 seconds.
Got one. Right? Just joined.
And
we're going to go for 35 seconds.
But the thing is if someone sees Danny's tweet in a minute's time, it's already over.
Yeah.
So
well, four people watching it.
Yeah. What's that?
Four people watching.
Four people.
Let's keep going.
Wow.
So
we're going to get 10. Everyone.
But the thing is, it's a lot to me. The live streaming is a long form thing. So you're going to get a sore arm because you're going to have to hold it up for like 40 minutes to actually make it of use. But from a sports point of view, it's a real issue.
Because, streaming rights and things like that.
Because people have paid big money for the TV rights, and they're like, well, you shouldn't be able to use it now. You know. Is a vertical video
just crashed,
which is crashed. Just, yeah. But is a vertical video of Buddy Franklin running down the wing, shot from the wing, really competing against a not quite HD vision version of Channel 7's coverage? It's not.
No,
So at the moment, it's still. I think it'll be a big discussion point at SEED in July in San Francisco. you know, whether the Wi-Fi networks turn it off, like they say, sorry, no Periscope, no Meerkat at our games.
That'd be pretty silly, I would have thought.
Yeah, but again, I mean, Premier League, you know, have been killing off vines that show highlights.
Yeah,
so
it's a thorny issue. I mean, we do a lot of sports apps here, and we spend a lot of our time. We've got a lot of we can stream all of our content straight to Chromecast on the Android side by default, and it costs us almost nothing to do. But we're actually using development time to block those things because we don't have streaming rights. Yeah. Well, our clients don't have streaming rights to actually push those things out.
Yeah, so it does get awkward when you say, oh, sorry, this is limited to 12 inches.
Yeah.
And no, we're talking about streaming rights, people. Streaming
the
rights.
NRL, the NRL app that we developed for Telstra is a perfect example. You know, they didn't have the rights to make it full screen, so we had to kind of build all this kind of UI around the video player to kind of trick the users into thinking that, you know, they were getting something rather than
nothing. And you have to hack the infrastructure. Totally. And so I think the next round of rights will probably, you know, just say digital is digital and digital is full screen. And
well, it's a good segue to this because we wanted to talk to you about this. You know, at what point will Telstra or Apple or Google pay more for the rights than Foxtel and Channel 7?
So it's not, I don't think it's will they pay more for the rights. It will be, is there more revenue available using that platform is probably the question. So
more revenue available than selling ads during a live TV broadcast.
So the best example and the holy grail of sports digital is Major League Baseball, and so they've got a tech company, Major League Baseball Advanced Media, that runs all of the digital for Major League Baseball. So the MLB.com, Major League at MLB at Bat, which is their app. And MLB on Apple and the subscriber package. So for, again, I don't subscribe, but let's say $300, you can watch every single game.
On any platform. On any platform.
And there's some local blackout rules. So if you're in Cincinnati and the Cincinnati game's on, you can't watch it because it's on TV. But pretty much the reason it works is because, you know, if you're a Boston Red Sox fan and you live in LA, the only way to watch Red Sox games is on MLB, right? And so, yes, you can get the MLB network package on cable, but you can also just get the MLB pass. And so that's been a, you know, super successful content play revenue generator that's seen, you know, a lot of, you know, the NBA follow suit with League Pass, the NFL follow suit as well. The WWE, so the wrestling, their whole channel, and they changed their whole model. Their whole model used to be their big events, their pay-per-view was where they got their money. Mm. Now for $9.95 a month, you get all their old catalog, original programming, and the pay-per-views on their Apple channel for $120 a year. And so it's taken them 9 months to get 1 million subscribers, which is break-even point for them. And so now they've got the power to, when their cable deals come up for their primary TV shows, Raw and SmackDown, when they come up, they can actually say, well, we just prefer to put it into our bundle and just have everyone on our network and just cut the cord of cable completely. And so that's where potentially sports will go to say, well, we want to get $100 from every, or $200 from every AFL fan, if I use AFL as an example, to watch it on their smart device, Apple TV, as opposed to, you know, $55 a month with Foxtel to see every game. You know, so it comes down to... But I don't think the Googles and the Apples of the world will buy it.
Right. You think the owners will be the sports associations themselves.
So at the moment, from an Australian point of view, I think they'll be hard pressed to reject the cash that gets thrown at them to keep the rights
in this next round. Just because it's just sort of easier for them to do that.
Yeah. I mean, unless someone at Telstra realises there's no one bidding against them, which, you know. So, but at the moment, you know, if the AFL, you know, if we take the last rights, they would have had to pass up $250 million, and then they'd have to say, do their sums, and will we make that money back doing it by ourselves?
Yeah.
And I would still say no.
Mm.
So let me pose a question to the AFL fans here at the table. I'm sure you guys all know, what's the going price for a season pass?
$90.
90?
On the app?
For the live pass through Apple.
Yeah.
And if you want to go to the games, how much is that? Just to go live games and become a member?
General admin's kind of 25 to 30 now, isn't it? And a visitor's ticket into the MCC with a reserve seat for a premium blockbuster game was about $35,
$40. So knowing these numbers, would you guys pay $100 a year, $300 a year? Like, what's your cutoff?
Well, I think the comparison is, it costs you like $25 a month on Foxtel on top of a regular package now to get the sports, to get the footy. So it's about $300 a year to subscribe to live footy.
It comes down to what you can afford. I mean, Foxtel's only still at 30%, which is still pretty low, 30% penetration Australia-wide, which is sort of why, you know, if you're a smaller sport and you've got a Foxtel deal and that's the only place people can see it, it's sort of like that's why people forgot about you. Mm. free-to-air still rules the roost in Australia. The clubs and the AFL are starting to do things like, you know, adding the digital pass as part of your membership. Like, they've got digital only memberships that include the live pass. So they're doing bundling options and things like that to get people, involved. But, you know, it's still got everyone's got multiple devices. You know, if you've got a family and you've got two kids, do you have to buy two passes? So you've got all of those.
Yeah,
things
the user experience is not quite there. They haven't got the rights yet to make it a user centrified sort of.
And the thing is, and I think the geographic nature of Australia and the way Australians are, like, there's not, you know, if you're from Melbourne, you've sort of lived in Melbourne all your life, and that's where you are. And so, if you want to watch a Carlton game, unfortunately, they're going to be on the TV on Friday night, like three times, in the next month.
I think there's actually five football teams per family here in Melbourne.
But the thing is, in Melbourne, it's not that hard to watch a lot of footy without paying extra.
Correct.
Yep.
Right. But if you're a Collingwood or a Carlton fan in Western Australia, you really have no choice but to get something like the, you know, Foxtel or the pass. Mm. But there's not that many transplanted Melburnians around Australia. It's not the same as, you know, people from Boston in LA. Like, there's so much, you know, and we've only got 20 million people. So it's not, you know, just don't have the massive volume of people demanding it.
So is there any club in Australia doing well with using digital and social media campaigns to translate it into membership and broader fan engagement, lift the profile of the sport in general?
I think they all are in relative levels. You know, the main stuff that we do with the clubs is to make sure that we find every single one of their fans. Facebook in particular helps do that. Like, if you're looking at the Facebook numbers of all the clubs, it's very easy to get a fan to like a team. And Facebook, for mine, gives a pretty good indication of how big their fan base is and where it is and the opportunities, because just because you know, Zuck has called the button a like button, right? So as a Collingwood supporter, I can't hit like on a Carlton page, right? Because I just can't, right? It's not in my nature. You know, there was even campaigns last year that love to hate Carlton, love to hate Collingwood, and they ran digital campaigns sort of having that banter. Whereas if you look at Twitter, the studies that we've done when we're looking at different clubs and analysing their fans, a lot of fans will follow, if you're a footy fan, you follow all the clubs because it's a news resource. So you want to, one, find out who's the late in or late out, and you have to follow the team. And so you're not showing support, but you're doing it to, one, see what they're doing, able to trash talk and
laugh
at them and all that kind of stuff. So so the thing is, from a Facebook point of view, it's a matter of attracting as many fans as we can, getting them onto the platform, then starting them on, you know, that customer journey. So, you know,
To becoming a member,
yeah. And that's pretty much the cycle that, you know, is Australia, is to, you know, I have this, usual slide that I show to say, you know, here's the customer journey. At the bottom, there's someone that just has just liked your team and watches you on the telly. And if you, you know, the what social gives and what digital gives, if I sort of go back in my time machine when I started Sports Geek, you know, five or 10 years ago as a Collingwood, Carlton, Hawthorn fan, whatever, in the off season, I use the off season example, you would have been contacted like 10 times, like two or three emails, maybe a direct mail piece that says become a member, and you know, and that's about it over like a 4 or 5 month period. But if you look at the previous off season, you would have had one or two Facebook posts per day, a couple of tweets come at you, an Instagram post a day. And so you've gone from 10 pieces of communication to literally thousands. So you can accelerate that passion and, you know, far quicker. And you can, you know, tell the story of why you should be a member or why you should come to the game or why you should believe in the coach or all of those things far, far quicker. And so we can accelerate that, whether it's getting them to come to one game or whether it's to be, you know, to become a member. So
how good is that? That's a really interesting observation. How good are these clubs at tracking that that response? So going, you know, we went from 5 years ago doing 10 pieces of communication in the off season to now 1,000.
Yep.
Are they seeing an uptick in the number of members they're getting? Is there direct correlation with that?
Yeah, it's not a direct line, but yeah. You know, the answer is yes. Yeah, right. I mean, so, you know, when I started Sports Geek, the teams, and this isn't just in Australia, had digital teams of like 1 and 2.
Right.
Like the best example I have is Jeremy McPeak, who is now the VP of digital at the Phoenix Suns. When, you know, back in 2009, his title was Suns Webmaster, right? That was his webmaster. Twitter handle. Sub web, you know, there's no webmasters anymore.
He does the PHPs.
Yeah, he does the internets. Can put this on the internets, please?
My computer's not working. Can you restart it for me, webmaster?
Yeah, yeah. And so you know, their team started with someone that was updating the website to now having fully fledged. You know, they're all their own media outlets. So they've all got content producers writing stuff for the website. They've got video guys. They've got, you know, community managers or social media, you know, managers that are managing all the platforms. And so they've gone from 1 to 2 to, you know, in some cases, you know, like Collingwood to, you know, 8 guys and girls, you know, that are in that digital department. And there is a correlation between, you know, page views and time on site and number of visitors that helps from a revenue point of view with sponsors, but also, you know, growing that pool, you know, the more Facebook fans, the more opportunity there is to get them on board as a member, whether it be a, you know, a 3-gamer introductory type package or, you know, or upgrading the people who are an 11-gamer to a Legends membership.
It's kind of the evolution of professionalising sport.
Yep.
As a business, like it's now, you know, a serious business.
Yeah, and to me, you know, people say, you know, how do we monetize, you know, social media? Yes, you can do a tweet and you can see that it, you know, generated revenue or whatever, but that's the way you monetize social media by saying, look at all this content we're putting out in the digital sense and look at the returns we're getting. So every team that we've worked with and leagues we work with is, you know, if you pour more content and good content into that bucket, the fans are insatiable in what they want. So that's where you sort of see the returns that, oh, look, we did a great video series. Our sponsors want to be all over it. Our fans love it. We want to do more of that. And so they start doing more of it.
Mm-hmm. I'd say my cousins and family back in Western Australia, they're all tweeting about English football teams.
Right.
We're not English at all. It's the strangest thing.
But that's the thing. Like the, you know, every league and club is now competing on a global stage.
Yeah.
Because the access.
It's much more accessible now.
The access to it is, you know, far more accessible. Like, you know, when I was a teenager, we used to get one NBA game on ABC late Friday night with Peter G, right? And that's it. And that's all you got. And so you had to pick one of the 5 teams they showed as who you could barrack for. And now, you know, with NBA League Pass, you can go, oh, I'm going to be a, you know, Golden State Warriors fan because I get to see all the games and I want to, you know. So
We used to rent videos to watch NBA.
Yeah, exactly.
All the highlights
videos
of Jordan and Barkley.
But now you can watch them live. You know, you can see someone, you know, oh, Klay Thompson's going off again, and you'd flick your, you know, open another tab and you're watching the game. So, you know, the sports fan has changed. You know, previously you were just rusted on, you know, Collingwood supporter, and then in the, you know, in the summer I followed the cricket. Mm. And now, you know, kids these days, it'll be I follow Real Madrid and I follow Liverpool and I follow, you know, someone in the IPL. I'm like, how are these kids keeping up with all these things, you know, because they can.
My kids spend a fair bit of time playing things like NBA 2K15 on the Xbox. And the amount of exposure and learning they get through that is incredible. Not only just they know all the players through the EPL, everything around the world through FIFA 15, but because the games themselves are so good now on the Xbox, let's say, my 9-year-old son will watch a simulated game and enjoy that as much as watching live sport. And his skills that he goes out and practices in the backyard come directly from the games. You know, the moves are so authentic. Mm. He sits there emulating NBA players' signature moves. It's really changed.
We used to do it off watching, you know, Michael Jordan's playground video.
We'd jump as far as we could.
Whereas now, you know, you got FIFA, you know, the NBA franchises, those games have just as much, you know, educated fans as well.
So changing gears a bit. So teams are using a lot of technology to get more fans, get more spectators, and make that experience better.
Yep.
I also hear that they're using technology to enhance the performance of their own players, not like illegally, but you know. So can someone tell me what Catapult Sports is?
The guys at Catapult are those you probably see them at training there, where the guys wearing the man bras. And they have the little device on their chest, and it's GPS tracking and performance data around what they're doing. So monitors all things. You know, it's not really an area I'm involved in, but it's all in that Moneyball and analytics type of stuff. So if you've seen the Brad Pitt movie Moneyball around analytics, that's a big growing area around the world of scouting and knowing your player's performance and again, not diving into the advances of tracking medically and all that kind of stuff, because then we'll just get down the rabbit hole of talking about Essendon. So, you know, all of that is a growing area that sports are using.
Yeah, I just want to get a hold of all the data. I love graphing things and displaying things up and stuff. And if I think of it, if you had all the data, it's like just how the players are performing, even just how their heart rates are going just throughout the game. Yeah. It'd be fascinating.
You've kind of got to be in that game because everyone else is. And if you're not looking at that data, then you're kind of, like you say, you're behind.
It's a bit keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah, totally.
It's, you know, someone says, oh, we're doing this thing. You know, I think, you know, Collingwood's got this special ice glove at the minute where the players are putting their hand in an ice glove and it's cooling them down and tricking the brain to think they're cooler. Right. Like, I don't know, previously they probably you would have used a bucket.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas now, you know.
It's just so different. Like, you watch the old footy games, you know, when, you know, in Carlton's glory days, and it was just, you know, that drink of beer on the side of the. So different now, isn't it?
But the funny thing is, and this is sort of where, like, the departments, the guys that I work with in the digital teams and, you know, the sponsorship teams, I'm like, there's some really cool data there. What if we could, you know, do a infographic of, you know, how far each player ran and all that kind of stuff, which is sort of in that fan stats, because, you know, all this, the stats part of sports is getting nerdier and nerdier, and, you know, fans are allowed, you know, proud about it, and fantasies are really, really big.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, that would be great content, a content piece that people would love to see. You know, I think the AFL sold sort of pictures of drawings of where all the players had run.
We've got that in the app. That's the heat map.
Yeah. The heat map or the, you know. But there's also the battle of the old school coach goes, no, we don't want to share that because that's competitive advantage. We don't want anyone to get it. So it is that balance of trying to let some of that info leak out to the fan. I think more and more of it's going to leak out, like, you know, here's heat maps and here's, you know, shot charts, all that. Like, it's getting more and more of it's leaking out to being regular fan content and pretty much admitting everyone's got it. We may as well let the fans have it as well.
Yeah.
But there's still old school coaches that go, no, we don't want, no, this is all.
proprietary.
And it's all proprietary. It is, you know, it's their IP and things like that. And so there is this arms race that, you know, everyone outside of sports doesn't even know is happening. Like they're all, you know, pushing the boundaries of, you know, using different technology to get an advantage, whether it's, you know, simple things like pre-cut, sliced up video replays of every player, yeah. And the player just gets them on an, you know, iPad, and he can watch every single time that he gets a ball that he always, you know, dribbles to his left, or he always handballs with his right.
Yeah.
And so the advanced scouting and stuff, and technology is allowing that, you know, to allow, yeah. You know, to have someone, you know, even 4 or 5 years ago, there was guys from teams driving to a place and picking up a hard drive that had all the footage, and then they'd go back and they would cut it and slice and dice it. Whereas now they just go onto the cloud and yeah. It's already sliced and diced, yeah. And they just hit a button and boom, there's the video for that yeah. player, and there's the video yeah. for that. So as that infrastructure comes in, it's much better for the players, and then it's not that far away from the app having that kind of functionality mm. to say, I want to just have a cam on Gary Ablett and give me the Gary Ablett highlights from this match. I want to see every single touch. It's, you know, we're not that far away yeah. from the app being able to give
Gary
that.
I want to see Gary Ablett running around with a man bra with Periscope yeah. live during the game.
Yeah.
yeah, yeah, but that's, I mean, that's possible.
Yeah, it would.
I was at the Grand Prix in March, and you know, that's a phenomenal app, and you know, that's a sport where you really do need a second screen so you can track what's happening, because you zoom by, but you can really, you know, you can see on the timing splits when, you know, someone's on a purple on a fast lap, and you can see when they're in the pits, and you get the live. What I thought was interesting, you get the live. If you subscribe, you get the kind of the English broadcast audio, which is, I think,
higher. You got to have the English broadcast,
which is just
as well.
Better. Yeah. Feels better than the kind of, you know,
it's
the
much. No, this is Spanish. It's, yeah, it makes yeah, you feel like yeah. you're somewhere else.
Yeah. And you get the, you know, you get the crosses, and you can choose the cams, and it's, you know, I think for some sports, it makes a lot of sense to yeah. have kind of digital where you couldn't access them before.
I went back,
and it makes sense for that because, you know, we all know that if it's streaming digital, it's not quite, it's near live, yeah. it's close to live. Yeah. So it works for that. Yeah. Whereas if you ever try to listen to the audio, you know, when you're at a game, it's a kick and a half behind. Yeah. So it's not live.
Yeah.
So
do you think they'll fix that problem? That's a problem with digital radio as well, isn't it? Yeah. There's just a delay in an encoding.
Yeah.
Is that ever going to go away? Don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a matter of getting the encoding.
One of our big issues, actually, remembering when we put the AFL app out for the first time, was the fact that we have the video, the vision, the digital vision streaming and the scores, and there is a delay with the vision and yeah. the scores are basically up to date. So yeah. it yep. sort of doesn't make sense if you watch them both.
That's still the case. Yeah. Like you open, you know, if I open up the NBA, so it's the last day of the NBA season now, I'll be watching games all day. And yeah, if I click on the button to say, what are all the scores? I go, they're going to score next.
Yeah.
And it's all like,
does he hit this three? Yep,
yeah,
he does.
Yeah,
he does.
Yeah. yeah, they're up by three now. Okay. Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Funny, know. It's like, you know, all this advanced technology and we still don't, you know, we can't sync up live games and live live vision and live
It's a race
scores.
Condition. Yeah, we're good at those.
Hopefully we can solve that big problem.
I mean, do we think technology is getting too far into sports now? Like even in tennis, like my main worry about tennis is that the angry tennis player is going to go away, because when they disagree with the umpire, they get angry and throw the racket, and that's good tennis to me. Mm. Anyway, I think it's good tennis to a lot of people.
Classic problem was the AFL, like what is it, last year or the year before, when they couldn't work out whether people were scoring goals or not, and they've got those silly cams now on the umpires' heads. They still aren't doing anything more sophisticated than just kind of, you know, the replay. But that's, I mean, even that is a huge change. The Hawkeye, the yep. you know, the cricket now.
See,
going
the umpires up. Should have Periscope. There's yeah. something that should be happening.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll just crash.
But yeah, I mean, from a tennis point of view, I think it does improve. I think angry tennis players are always going to be there. You know, I think, you know, if John McEnroe was playing now, he'd still argue.
Andre Agassi.
You know,
he broke a good racket or two.
Yeah, but it does, you know, as long as it helps, you know, make the decisions better. Yeah,
what's the one sport that's been least affected by technology?
Football, like soccer.
Really? Yeah.
Well, one, they don't, you know, they haven't changed the rules in forever.
Yep.
And they're still umming and ahhing about that goal line technology because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, so, you know, if they would, you would think, you know, with high stakes, you know, 2 to 3 goals per game, they would throw all the money in the world at it, and they haven't. Mm. So
what about lawn bowls?
No. They've got Bluetooth enabled bowls now, don't they? They tell you how you
measuring devices.
It's a, it's a far younger game than you realise.
It's an NFC transaction every time they hit each other. Yeah. Let's just stumped us. Lawn bowls. All right, cool. I think we've actually just run out of stuff to talk about now.
Yeah. No, I don't think we have, but I think we're running out of time.
Yeah, we're running out of time to talk about. Yeah, we could probably go for another hour or so. Awesome. Thank you, everybody, for coming in.
Thank you.
It's been, really good. I don't watch a huge amount of sports, I'll be honest. I used to watch a good game of cricket with my grandfather, and he used to ask him who's winning, and he loved it. He didn't. So, yeah, thank you, everybody, for coming in. Thank you, Danny, Anthony. Thank you very much, Sean.
No worries. If people want more, they can go to my website, sportsgeekhq.com, where the Sports Geek podcasts live. And if they want to check out my other podcasts, which is Beers, Blokes, Business, which is a lot like this, except we drink beer and talk about our businesses.
I'll be on that show anytime you want.
So I that's don't have at, a business. But that's at beersblokesbusiness.com. So if you run a business or you're entrepreneurial or you want to learn how other blokes are running their business, and we've had some pretty savvy guests on that as well.
Who have you had on that?
So we had Will Anderson talking about the business of being a comedian, which was really, really interesting. We've had Michelle Matthews, who runs Secrets cards, you know, the playing cards that give you bar advice and that around the world.
Yep.
How she just travels around the world looking at going to bars and writing reviews and built a whole business off it.
Fun.
To guys like John Manning, who's a pricing expert, and talked a lot about, you know, how to price your services, how to price an app and the strategies around it. And then we just talk about other things that we've sold or what we've found is a lot of the boring topics of business have been the successful ones. So like talking about how to motivate staff or salaries or, you know, how to change industries because a few of us blokes have changed industries like myself. So it's been quite good as from a response point of view.
Yeah. And what are you, if we want to find you on Twitter?
At Sean Callanan or at Sports Geek. You can pretty much find me on all platforms, you know.
We'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for coming in. It's always great to talk to an expert who knows a lot of stuff about a lot of stuff.
Yeah, no worries. That's what I've got on my bio. I know a lot of stuff about a lot of stuff.
Thank you for your time this morning.
Cheers, mate. Or this afternoon.
This afternoon, tonight.
This evening.
I'll be to say, everybody. Goodbye.